Tzaveh es b'nei Yisrael v'yikhu eilecha shemen zayis zoch kosis lamaor l'halos ner tamid b'ohel moed michutz laparoches asher al hoidus yaroch Oso Aharon uvanav me'erev ad boker lifnei Adonai chukas olam ledorosam me'eis b'nei Yisrael. And now you, not the now, that's not part of the pasuk, and you command the children of Israel and take to you pure olive oil for the lighting of the lamp, in order to have the ner tamid, the light of the menorah always. Where is the menorah? In Ohel Moed, the Mishkan, outside the parochet, which is the curtain that divides between the Heichal and the Kodesh Kodashim. That's where Aharon and his children, the Kohanim, should set up the menorah, that it should burn me erev ad boker, from evening until morning before God. Chukat olam ledorotam. This is a perpetual command throughout the generations. May eight b'nei Israel, that the people of Israel provide the olive oil for the lighting of the lamps of the menorah. What's noteworthy about this, I'll tell you right now, is that these first two psukim about lighting the menorah might have been found earlier in Truma when we were commanded to make the menorah, but instead they find themselves at the beginning of the following parsha of Tetzaveh, where the major portion coming up is the fashioning of the garments for the Kohanim and the Kohen Gadol, and one more vessel of the Beit HaMikdash, of the Mishkan, namely the golden altar, the incense altar, the internal altar that stood opposite the parochet, near the menorah and near the shulchan. And that's the story. We'll get more later. And now, dot, dot, dot. That's called an ellipsis, by the way. And it brings us to the Maftir. We take out two Torahs this Shabbat. And in the second Torah, we read three verses at the end of Parshat Ki Teitzeh, known as Parshat Zachor. Zachor eis asher asah lecha Amalek baderech b'tzeisachem mimitzrayim asher karacha baderech vayzanev becha kol hanecheshalim acharecha v'yata oyef v'yogea v'lo yorei Elohim v'haya behani achadonai Elohecha lecha mikol oyevecha misaviv ba'aretz asher Adonai Elohecha nosein lecha nachala lirishtah timche es zeicher amalek mitachas hashamayim lo tishkach. Remember what Amalek, the nation of Amalek, named after the grandson of Esav, remember what they did, baderech b'tzeitchem mimitzrayim, when we were on our way out of Egypt, that they encountered you on the road, and they attacked the rear where the weaker members of the people were straggling, and you were tired and exhausted, and they did not fear God. So, therefore, when God will allow you to vanquish your enemies in Eretz Yisrael, in the land which God is giving us as a nachala to inherit, you have a command of Timche et Zecher Amalek, to wipe out the remnant of Amalek mitachat hashamayim, from under the heavens, and a mitzvah of Lo Tishkach. We'll talk more about this in the continuation of the show.
OU Israel presents...
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. Your host is Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Tizavet and Shabbat Zachor. Recording and first availability is Yom Kamishi, Thursday, the 7th of Adar, 5778, corresponding this year to February 22nd. And now, here is your host, the aforementioned Phil Chernofsky.
Thank you, Zira. You're getting better each week with those pronunciations. We almost got Yom Chamishi, and got to work on Tetzava and Zachor, but pretty good. Okay, got a few things to discuss. Music in the beginning was from an album by Lipa Schmelzer. It was a very short piece, 48 seconds, called Timche. And it's from the portion of Zachor, which I read before. And we'll have another version of a song by Avromi Flam called Macho Timche. And both of those will be for Parshat Zachor, which we will speak about. Hopefully we'll also get to speak about Parshat Tetzaveh, and a little bit about the upcoming Purim. The next show will be in Mir Tzashem next Thursday, which is Purim Day outside of Jerusalem. It will be not yet Purim here in Yerushalayim, but will certainly, hopefully, be in the Purim mood. But let's get right into business. But let's start with Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim kraticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tehiena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor ya Adonai mi'amod, ki imacha hasalicha l'ma'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro ho'cholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mishomerim la'boker, shomerim la'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut, v'hu yifdeh et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara v'ashivya ha-omidim mebein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha-makom yurachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara l'yirvacha u'me'afela l'ora u'mishibud l'geula, Hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. Okay, it is not right after I just finished Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael. It's about 15 minutes later. And what I've been doing during these 15 minutes, 12 of them, I had been recording to a muted microphone. I really, really have to get this microphone changed, because it has a mute button, which I must have accidentally hit with my body somehow. and 12 minutes were wiped out. I went to the internet to check, and the famous gap in the recording back in Nixon's time was 18 and a half minutes. But, wait a minute, there's a 13-minute thing also. It says the 18 and a half minute gap. She later insisted that she was not responsible for the remaining 13 minutes of buzz. Whatever. I have 12 minutes that disappeared. Not disappeared. I've been talking to myself. So I'm going to try to recreate them, and I hope I'm not pressured for time yet. And I had not yet gotten to Zachor, but I was speaking about the date, Zayin Adar. Zayin Adar is the traditional date of Moshe Rabbeinu's birth and his death. According to the Torah, he lived 120 full years. He had all his faculties when he died, and his life sort of becomes an ideal model of full, long life and no diminished capacity as he approached the end. Of course, we're not going to get into a period of almost 40 years where we don't know much about what happened to him, and the Midrashim fill in some of those blanks, but that's not the point. The point is that today is Zayin Adar, and Zayin Adar is the traditional date that is observed by Chevra Kadisha, the burial societies in Jewish communities around the world. They gather, some of them fast, they have special prayers, they have a su'udat mitzvah, a festive meal when the fasting is over, or whatever they decide to do. But the choice of Zayin Adar is because God himself was the Chevra Kadisha who took care of Moshe Rabbeinu's burial. The Torah makes a point of saying that no one knows the burial place of Moshe to this very day. And the reasons that are given for that include not wanting people, Jewish people, to over-venerate the location and step over the red lines or the fuzzy lines of, God forbid, any kind of idolatry. Be that as it may, Chevra Kadisha celebrate / commemorate / observe, however you want to put it, the 7th of Adar. For the rest of us, the 7th of Adar, some people don't say Tachanun, some people do, and pretty much people are aware of the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was born and died on that date. Just a side point that if we take Zayin Adar as his birth date, which the Torah does not mention, what we get there is the Torah's account that his mother was unable to hide him for 3 months, which we are taught by Midrashim. It's because he was born 3 months premature, and that the Egyptians, in order to observe the command and decree of Paro to kill all the boys that were born, throwing them into the Nile, they kept track on the pregnant women. And if Yocheved's due date, so to speak, was known, then his being born early, they were able to keep him without danger for those first 3 months. But then she had no choice, but she chose to make the waterproof basket and float him on the Nile, and the rest, as we say, is history. So if you count the end of those three-month period, you go from Zayin Adar till 6 or 7 of Sivan as the date that Moshe Rabbeinu was pulled out, was placed into the Nile, and the same day taken out by Bat Paro, and that is Shavuot, the date of Matan Torah. In other words, 80 years later. 80 years? 80 years later, when Moshe ascended Har Sinai to receive the Torah and to transmit it to Bnei Israel, it was on the anniversary or so of the date that he was saved from the Nile. And that has a significance as well. Now, the other thing about Moshe Rabbeinu, and specifically his birth date and Yahrzeit, is that it very often on the calendar happens in the week in which we read Parshat Tetzaveh, which is this week. Today is Thursday of Parshat Tetzaveh. In another 2 days, even less now, because I'm recording this in the afternoon, and the 2 days from now in the morning will be Shabbat, when we read Parshat Tetzaveh. And this morning, Parshat Tetzaveh, the beginning was read, is famous and conspicuous for Moshe Rabbeinu's name not occurring. From Shemot, where he was born, through the book of Shemot, the book of Vayikra, and the book of Bamidbar, every Sedra has Moshe Rabbeinu's name, with the single exception of Tetzaveh. There is a misconception that his name occurs in every Sedra for the rest of the Torah, with the exception of Tetzaveh. And this is not so when it comes to Devarim, because Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu, is the speaker and narrator of much of the book, and therefore he refers to himself as I, God spoke to me, without using his name. So you find out of 11 Sedras in Devarim, 5 of them do not have Moshe Rabbeinu's name. But that does not make the comment that Tetzaveh does, and I'll tell you why in a moment. But for your information, the Sedras of Akev, Re'eh, Shofatim, and Ki Tetzeh, 4 Sedras in a row, no Moshe Rabbeinu's name. Then Ki Tavo has, as did Devarim in Vo'et Hanan, and then Nitzavim does not have his name, and Vayelech Ha'azinu and Vizot HaBracha do. So his name is conspicuously missing, really only from Tetzaveh. And the explanations for it include what I would say is a negative reason and a positive reason. The negative reason is that in Parshat Ki Tisa, next week, etc., we have the account of the sin of the golden calf. We have Moshe Rabbeinu coming down and destroying it and castigating the people and then praying on their behalf for God's forgiveness. And when God, in his anger, so to speak, threatens to destroy the people and start all over again for Moshe, Moshe says, if you forgive them, fine. And if not, Mecheni na misifrcha asher katavta. Erase my name from the book that you wrote also. God says to Moshe, and this happens more than once with other people in the Torah, God says to Moshe, I'll forgive the people as you ask. But I want you to know that you can't get away completely by saying to me, erase my name from your book. So I will erase your name from one portion of the Torah. Which one? The one that's nearest your birth date and your Yahrzeit. That's one explanation. More significantly, in my opinion, the one that is at the end of the whole cycle of the Torah, starting from Ki Tisa, where he said, erase me from your book. It's as if God says, okay, but not in this week, not in Ki Tisa, next week. And the week after, no, not in Vayakel or Pekudei either, and so on and so on and so on. God, kivyochol, so to speak, reluctantly does not pull Moshe's name out until he gets to the very last Sedra, not the last Sedra of the Torah, but the last Sedra if you start the cycle from Ki Tisa. The last one is Tetzaveh, this week's Sedra for us, and that's the one that his name is missing. On the positive side, the center of attraction, the focus of the Sedra of Tetzaveh, this week's Sedra, is Aharon HaKohen, Moshe's brother. You have the first two verses about lighting the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash in the Mishkan. That's the function of the Kohen. You have the presentation of the garments of the Kohen. Again, Kohanim, Aharon. You have the daily sacrifices. You have the functioning of the Mishkan. You have the offering of incense on the golden altar. All functions of the Kohen. It's as either as if Moshe Rabbeinu takes a step out of the limelight and says, all the honor and glory to my brother. Or God, so to speak, pulls Moshe's name out of Tetzaveh in order to allow Aharon as the sole focus of the Sedra. Now Moshe is present in the Sedra in big time in pronoun form, the antecedents of which are him. But even the name of the Sedra is, the beginning is V'ata Tetzaveh, and you, parentheses Moshe, not named, you command the people to get olive oil for the lighting of the menorah, and you, and you, and you, which we find several times in the Sedra. So there are lessons to be learned from the absence of Moshe Rabbeinu's name. Now, I got curious, and I went to a couple of different programs that I have access to, and especially a new one, which I highly, highly recommend to anyone who wants to look into the Torah or in Tanakh for any purpose. It's a website called alhatorah.org, alhatorah.org. I'm not even going to describe it, because if you're listening to me and you want to look at Tanakh or you want to look at the Torah, go to that website. It's got good English as well as Hebrew instructions, and many of the texts are in English as well, not all of them, of course. But it is a magnificently done site that, A, continues to be improved all the time, and B, I have found very responsive for my comments. When I discovered something that for my purposes it would be nice if I call, the first time I called, a fellow named Rabbi Hillel Novetsky, who's in charge of the whole project, and he's a amazing, amazing guy. First time I called him, the next day already the feature was added to the program. Called him recently with three different suggestions. He said two of them are in the works already. One will happen sooner than the other. The other one is more complicated. And the third one we're still negotiating on. Because what I would like for what I do with it doesn't mean that everyone else will be able to use it and benefit from it. In any event, using that program as well as the search capacities of Dafka Writer, which are not as good as other search programs, but are very good because they allow you to use nikud, the vowels, and make the searching vowel sensitive. So I won't get words like chamisha, which have the mem shin he of Moshe, because I need only words that have mo she. And therefore I do get the words I want, bimoshe, limoshe, umoshe, uvimoshe, kimoshe, and that helps my statistics. One of which I will share with you, that not only is Moshe's name missing from Tetzaveh, but the previous Sedra, which started about the building of the Mishkan, which is also an Aharon-centered topic, has only one Moshe at the very beginning, and the rest has no Moshe Rabbeinu's name. I don't think it has Aharon either, but that's not the point. So Moshe Rabbeinu was conspicuously missing from Tetzaveh, where the pronouns are obviously used in order not to write his name, and the sedra that has more Moshe than any other sedra is next week. That means the sedra in which Moshe said to God, if you don't forgive the people, erase my name from your book, has 49 occurrences of the name Moshe more than any other sedra. I think that's something to ponder, or at least I think that's something to ponder because I love statistics. And if you love statistics, it's a minor section of alhatorah.org, but does a beautiful job in the concordance section. And I won't tell you more. Go to the website. It's just, and learn how to use it. You discover more and more things from the toolbar and from many other features as well. Okay. Before we get into Zohar, I want to play the Avrami Flam Macho Timche, and then we'll talk. Well, I had been looking for this song, and I thought it was called Zachor, and I couldn't find it on my computer. And then I remembered that it was called Timche, and I found that, and I found the other one from Lipa. And I found that this one was called Macho Timche. And that's weird, because I just looked it up on Al HaTorah. And the only place it says Macho is Macho Emche, when God says he will verily erase the remnant of Amalek mitachat hashamayim. The command in Parshat Zohar is just Timche, not Macho Timche. So why the song is named that, chalk it up to the equivalent of a typo or a goof on the part of whoever named the song. Not the point. So let's now get into Parshat Zohar. The Torah first introduces us to the attack of the nation of Amalek against the Jewish nation just coming out of Israel at the end of Parshat Bishalach. The last nine psukim of Bishalach begin with Vayavo Amalek, and Amalek came, Vayilochem im Yisrael b'Rephidim, and they fought with Israel in the place called Rephidim. And it describes there how Moshe says to Yeshua to gather an army, and he did from the tribes. And Moshe, Aharon, and Hur, their nephew, went up to a hilltop to pray. And they were victorious, not to vanquish Amalek completely, but they won the battle. And God tells Moshe, write down this in the book, and Sim Ba'aznei Yehoshua, make sure you tell Yehoshua that I will do my share at wiping out Amalek, and it will be to him who will bring the people, doesn't say it at this point, who will bring the people into the land of Israel, where the mitzvah of Mechiyat Amalek takes effect. In other words, there's no obligation to destroy Amalek before we get to Eretz Yisrael, and then comes the command. But I get a little bit ahead of myself. The nine psukim at the end of Bishalach constitute the Torah reading of Purim morning. Next Friday morning in Yerushalayim, next Thursday morning in the rest of the Jewish world, they will read those nine psukim of Vayavo Amalek, and the reason they do it is because Amalek was Haman was a descendant of Amalek, and it makes that connection. Now we go all the way to the portion that I read earlier in the end of Ki Teitse, three verses which contain three commands, three mitzvot. One is to remember what Amalek did. Remember. How does that work? Oh, yeah, I remember. Not enough. There is memory in your mind and your heart, and there's memory facilitated by your mouth. And we are taught that this Zachor, Et Asher Asalecha Amalek, must be done verbally, because the end of the portion contains another mitzvah called Lo Tishkach, Thou Shalt Not Forget. So our sages teach us that not forgetting means the mental and the heart without verbalizing, that we have to remember, that we can't forget. That's something you do with your heart or your mind. And therefore, Zachor needs to be more than that. And the answer is, it's verbalizing. Specifically, our sages said as follows. The Torah says we just have to remember Amalek. When? Doesn't tell us. How often? Doesn't tell us. Could be every day. Could be once in a while. And the guideline for the length of time that memory persists, active memory, is a year or 12 months. That's why we have a yahrzeit for a lost parent, because we will not forget in the course of a year, but once a year comes, we need the refresher of the memory, and that's the observance of a yahrzeit, the lighting of a candle, the learning of Mishnayot, the saying of Kaddish, all those things that reawaken our memories for another year. So too, our sages said, we are going to command, you could remember Amalek any time you want, but we are going to command you to actively verbalize the memory of Amalek once a year, and they chose the Shabbat before Purim to make the Amalek-Haman connection, and they said it's got to be in public, read from a proper Sefer Torah, and sure enough, this coming Shabbat, we take out two Torahs rather than one. In the first Torah, we read the weekly portion of Tetzaveh, and in the second Torah, we read what is known as the Maftir of Zohar, those three psukim in the end of Ki Teitse. And when you hear or actually read the reading. When you hear the reading from a kosher Sefer Torah with brachot, the way it's supposed to be done in shul, you have fulfilled the mitzvah of Zachor, remembering Amalek. According to many sources, that is the way that we fulfill the mitzvah of the Torah each year. The Sefer Achinuch says the Torah never specified how often. And it's his opinion that this could be fulfilled on a Torah level every so often. In fact, you could argue that the Sefer Achinuch says that once a person has heard Zohar once in his adult life, he has already fulfilled the mitzvah of the Torah forever, and the yearly observance of Zohar is rabbinic. And this is a message that I give to new bar mitzvah boys and bat mitzvah girls, that they should have this Shabbat special intention to fulfill the mitzvah, which, according to the Sefer Achinuch, this might be the time in their entire life that they are fulfilling the mitzvah on its highest level of Torah obligation of Zachor. Now, there's more, and I don't think I'm going to get to everything, but I do want to bring this in a certain direction. Before I get there, the mitzvah that is sandwiched in the middle of verbally remembering and not forgetting in your mind or your heart is timche, destroy Amalek. V'haya b'haniach Hashem Elokecha lecha mikol oyevecha misaviv. When you will be rested from the battles of all of your enemies in Canaan, in Eretz Yisrael. Ba'aretz, in the land which Hashem is giving you. Nachala lirishta, to inherit. Then you have an obligation, in addition to the building of the Beit HaMikdash, in addition to the appointing of a king, the third one is annihilate Amalek. Timche et zecher Amalek mitachat hashamayim. God has already promised he's going to do his share, but it's a joint effort and we need to do it as well. I'll talk about that aspect in a little while, but I want to get now back to Zachor. What are we supposed to remember? It seems we're supposed to remember what the Torah says, that what Amalek did when we came out of Egypt. What'd they do? They attacked us. They were the first nation who dared attack us after the wonders of the Exodus from Egypt, which were known throughout the world, that nobody would touch the children of Israel who has God on their side. Amalek tried. And even if he didn't succeed at that point, it opened the door for other peoples to attack us. And it created a Jewish history track record of anti-Semitism and anti-Jewishness and being attacked throughout history in all different times and all different types and forms. So that's Amalek. And that's something to remember. But there's another aspect to it, an aspect that is highlighted by the author of the Sefer Charedim, a Rabbi Elazar Azkari, a contemporary during the 16th century of the Common Era, living in Sfat, contemporary of the author of the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Karo, and of the Arizal, and of other Kabbalists at that time, he writes that a very important aspect of what we're supposed to remember is why we became vulnerable to attack from Amalek in the first place. He says, you look into the Torah, back in Parshat B'Shalach, where we have Vayavo Amalek, and what comes right before that? Complaint, complaint, complaint. What? You took us out of Egypt because you don't have enough graves there, and you're killing us in the Midbar? We're thirsty. We should have stayed in Egypt. We're hungry. We remember fondly the great food they had in Egypt, and you took us out of Egypt. Terrible complaints. It angered God, so to speak. And what's the very next thing we read about? First, he gave us the drink, the water. He gave us the food, the miraculous manna, mun. But he also was upset. And in the wake of that lack of faith, compounded by those who didn't listen about not leaving over the mun for the morning, compounded by those who went out on Shabbat day to look for mun when they were told not to, because it would fall a double portion on Friday and it won't fall on Shabbat. That lack of faith, which in Parshat Ekev, God emphasizes, Moshe, in God's name, emphasizes that the mun was not just sustenance to carry us through the wandering in the Midbar, it was a constant test of our faith. And there were many times in the Midbar that we failed that test. What comes right after that? Vayavo Amalek, Vayilochem im Yisrael, Birfidim. The root of the name Rifidim is Rafa, which means weakened. And Chazal tell us, our sages tell us, that because we were weakened in our belief in God, our trust in God, and our keeping of the mitzvot, we became vulnerable to Amalek. Not to be wiped out, chas v'shalom, God forbid, from Amalek, but threatened by them. And that is part of Zohar. And I would say, I tend to agree with the approach of the Haredim, not today's Haredim, but that's another story, with the author of the Sefer Haredim, and that is a highly constructive element of Zohar. And I'll show you where it carries through, right to Purim, specifically the day before Purim, or in Yerushalayim, 2 days before Purim, next Wednesday. Next Wednesday is Ta'anit Esther, the fast of Esther. Why do we fast on the day before Purim? If you say, because in the Megillah, Esther requested a 3-day fasting of the people on her behalf so she could approach the king without royal permission to do that, that probably explains why we call it Ta'anit Esther, but not necessarily why we have that fast day. The fasting for Esther was done Pesach time, almost a full year before the Purim story. So it gets its name, Ta'anit Esther, because she's the one in the Megillah that asked for fasting. That the people fast on the day that they do battle, that is a better explanation as to why we fast on Erev Purim, because that was the day we were fighting against our enemies. And another aspect of the fast is what we did to become vulnerable to Haman. The same question I asked about what we did to become vulnerable to Amalek goes for Amalek's great-great-great-great-great-grandchild, Haman. Haman threatened the Jewish people with annihilation. We celebrate on Purim that he had a dismal failure. He was taken out of the picture almost a year before his plot was to be hatched. But thanks to the ridiculous policies of Ahasuerus, and perhaps the sinister motives of Ahasuerus, he says to Esther after she revealed herself as a Jew, what can I do? A decree of the king can't be rescinded. Well, the King of Kings, God, can rescind his decrees. That's what Purim represents to us. But Ahasuerus can't rescind his. So following the same idea as the author of Sefer Haredim, although I don't know if he said it about Tanit Esther, I'm suggesting it, and I got this from the Sefer by Rabbi Yoel Schwartz, Adar Ufurim, that Tanit Esther is the day for sober, purposely used word, introspection as to why we came under the threat of Haman, even though he didn't succeed. I have always said, and especially when we're talking about Arab terrorism throughout our history here in the state of Israel, the attempt against us, the launching of rockets towards Jewish areas, is the responsibility of the terrorist, of the Arabs, whoever does it, of the Hamans in our time. The success or failure is up to God. In other words, it's not really so in human perception, but it should be. Attempted murder and murder are really the same. If a person intends to murder someone and his gun misfires or somebody stops him in time, it does not change his intention. And we don't let Haman off the hook or Amalek off the hook in spite of their failures. So then the question is, okay, if that's what I'm supposed to think about on the day before Purim, so specifically what am I supposed to be thinking about? And one of the answers is the participation of the Jews of the Persian kingdom at the lavish parties Ahasuerus threw in his own honor. We are told that those parties, half a year worth of parties, imagine partying every single day for 180 days. Those parties were included the flaunting of the vessels that were plundered from the Beit HaMikdash, which Ahasuerus had stolen from the Babylonian conquerors, that he paraded around in the garments of the Kohen Gadol and announced repeatedly that he was greater than the God of Israel, because the God of Israel didn't save the Jews from exile and didn't save the Jews from their temple being destroyed. What was a Jew, any Jew, doing at that party? Eating and drinking. That, according to an approach, made us vulnerable to Haman's threat. The bold actions of Esther and Mordechai, and perhaps the repentance of the people, led to the failure of Haman's plot, but not to the threat of the sword being held above our heads. In fact, because of that ridiculous law of Ahasuerus, that he couldn't rescind and just gave Esther and Mordechai the right to write anything they wanted, long after Haman was hanged and his sons were out of the picture, the threat to the Jewish people still existed. So we need to reflect on what we do when we are living in countries of our dispersion. Do we become like everybody else? Do we make excuses for participating in the national celebrations, some of which are against what we believe in? And how comfortable we get in countries of dispersion. Now, we really should be thinking about this on Purim Day, but Chazal were smart, and they did not want us to spoil the celebration of Purim. But they gave us a day of reflection not a day of mourning, a day of reflection, called Ta'anit Esther, for us to think these things through. I think that is the very significant connection between Zachor, according to the Sefer Charedim, and Purim in general, but Ta'anit Esther specifically. And I think on that note, we will finish with a Purim song, and we will, let me just mention one more thing. The eating and drinking, which was wrong of the people to do, has two rectifications, two repairs, two tikkunim. One is the mitzvah to have a su'udat Purim, where we eat l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven, where we drink even to a little bit of an excess for the sake of heaven, to repair the wrongful eating and drinking at the parties of Ahasuerus. And fasting is another form of tikkun. You abstain from eating and drinking to repair the improper eating and drinking. Now you indulge in eating and drinking for the right motives to repair the improper eating and drinking. I think these are important things to keep in mind and to share with your families at their Purim Seuda. So on that note, as I said, we'll put on a nice Purim song, but on that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, a Purim Sameach, hopefully there'll be another show Purim time, and remember what Amalek did to Bnei Israel when they left Egypt. What else to remember? Why we became vulnerable to that, to the threat of Amalek throughout the generations. And Lehishtamea.
Who did it? אשר ישמטו היהודים. אשר ישלטו היהודים, אשר ישלטו היהודים.